Okay, quick side note. If you follow me on Instagram, you know that I'm working on my self-discipline with my self-care, and it's a journey, but I am making some progress thanks to this tool. So I've been using my Loombox red light therapy before bed, and I'm honestly loving it. It's one of those things I didn't fully understand at first, but now I'm reaching for it without thinking. So I could be that annoying person that lists out all the thousands of studies about red light therapy, but instead I'm just going to tell you why I'm personally using it. So I'm using it to help with my inflammation because unfortunately I have a lot of it. I'm also using it for cell regeneration for my skin. I'm using it to help regrow my hair. I've even used it on my kids when viruses are going through our house. So as a mom of four and a business owner, the relaxation I'm experiencing before bed is honestly life-changing. And so if you're curious about red light therapy and want to give it a try, you can actually take $260 off with my link in the show notes. So go check it out. Hey there, everybody. Welcome to the Caitlin James podcast. We normally dive into everything that doesn't fit on my YouTube channel, but today I am diving into a conversation with a dear friend that I am so excited for you to meet and hear her story and hear her heart behind her business and her family. So welcome, Shay.
I'm so excited.
I'm so excited that you're here. This has been a long time coming.
It is such an honor to be here and just so much fun to get to sit down and have a talk, like you said, with an old friend.
Yes. And we tried to do this before, not to date this episode, but before I had a baby. And honestly, it's so much better that we're doing it
now.
I feel like a new person. So my background with Shay. Let me just tell you my background, and then I'm going to let Shay give you like a very broad overview of like, how did you get to the place that you're in, and and where are you now? Because what I remember of your story is that you were a photographer in Charlottesville when I was kind of a newlywed, getting into like the education scene, but wasn't quite there yet. And I remember hearing about this girl named Shay hosting workshops. And I remember thinking to myself, someone else is hosting workshops? Who is this girl? And then, you know, I don't think we really even connected until much later through a conference. Was it Creative at Heart?
I'm trying to think. Or Pursuit? It was one of those. Maybe it was Creative at Heart.
Yes.
That makes sense. Long time
yes.
ago. Yes.
But
is that like
it was.
12 years
and
ago?
I,
or it was a long time ago.
Oh my gosh, was it? Back before I knew that I even wanted to be a mother, and I mean, crazy. But I remember one of the greatest gifts of getting to know Shay and her story is I've loved seeing you evolve, and you're one of the best examples, I think, in our industry, in the photography industry, of someone who was not satisfied with what you were doing, and you literally took your gift and your passion and created something from scratch in order to pursue and do something that really filled you up. And I think so many people want that and they desire that. They're burned out, but they're like, well, this is all there is. You either shoot portraits, weddings, or maybe do some brand portraits. And that's all you can do as a photographer. And you're like, nope, I'm just
going to make something
up. I'm going to make something up and it's going to be wildly successful. So if you guys have ever heard of Social Squares, basically, an amazing opportunity for you specialize in women in business. Like your focus is on women. Why don't you dive in and share how you got from being the Charlottesville photographer that I heard about to where you are now?
And I have a little bit of funny color commentary of my perspective of you when I was getting in the wedding photography scene. So, I started with wedding and portrait photography right out of college because, like everyone else, I thought that was the only way that you could make money if you were an aspiring photographer. So I got into that, and that was about the time that you probably heard about me. It's laughable that you would even have heard about me because, guys, I was not big time. Listen, there were no Shay J brides. There was nothing. It was not impressive. I was doing a few weddings a month. You know, I was a small fry and I liked it and I was an okay wedding photographer. I think my clients were happy, you know, but I remember in those days hearing about incredibly talented other photographers like Caitlin James and Jasmine Starr and all these people with splashy names and big followings. And it's just my perspective was like, man, those are women who are really actually gifted. And I was just doing my best to like emulate what I was seeing that was being done by really naturally gifted photographers. So that's my two cents on what I thought of you in those early days is I just had...
That's very kind.
It's true. I've always just seen what a talented photographer you are. Effortlessly talented photographer you are. So I was just doing my best to emulate what I was seeing other people do. And I think that's an important point, right? That was how I knew eventually that this wasn't the thing for me. I was decently successful as I had hoped to be with it. It was when I was starting to have kids. Yeah, there's a lot of other things were happening during that season, but to shorten that story, we moved from Virginia to Florida to help plant a church. I had my first child. We moved thousands of miles away from family and friends. We moved with some friends to help plant a church. New baby, new mortgage, no family. This is 2009. The recession has hit. Graham loses his job that he moved down here to work. I have a newborn and I'm just trying to take some wedding work, but I have no clientele here. And I had never done any advertising. It had always been word of mouth. I'm in, you know, a new location. And I find myself in Florida, which has a lot of wedding photographers. It's obviously a destination for a lot of weddings. And I got to meet a lot of them. And all of a sudden, it just became evident in my own heart that, man, there are a lot of really amazing, talented wedding photographers whose whole heart is in it. They really genuinely are excited about the colors and the theme and the details and the flowers. And they would lay awake at night thinking of posing ideas. And I would just lay awake at night with indigestion, trying to figure out how I was going to nurse and be gone for 10 hours and let alone come up with creative ideas. And again, like at best, even though I think I was talent, I had a baseline talent and I really did try to work hard at it and deliver a beautiful product. But at best, I was really still just trying to emulate what I respected in other people and saw other people doing well. It wasn't coming from a place of intrinsic, intuitive creativity. It was just me trying to use the skill that I had. So it was in that season of new mom, new state, you know, crazy financial circumstances, family hardship, just try, you know, what in the world are we doing here and what am I going to do? I realized I didn't really want to do weddings. I realized I'm really struggling with this balance of being a mom and running a business. Like, I don't know how to do that, do both of those things at the same time. So I knew I got at least to the point that I knew I needed to stop doing wedding work, but I didn't know what to do instead. You know, like, okay, I've got thousands of dollars of gear and I've got 8 years worth of wedding work on a website and no idea what to pivot into because I didn't just want to do portraits. And I remember the evening that I was sitting on the couch with Graham and all of a sudden, you know, I was playing that game, and some people who are listening to this can probably relate to this, where you're getting inquiries and you're just like not getting back to them because you kind of know that you don't want to do it, but the money's there. And, you know, if you have inquiries sitting in your inbox that you are not answering because you know in your heart of hearts that you don't want to do anymore, you need to stop and listen to that.
Yes, that is an entrepreneurial red flag.
Yes, it is. And like, it's okay. Like, it's okay. You're not, there's nothing wrong with you. It's just a sign that something new is trying to break through, and you can either resist it. And I did for like 2 years. I'll just take it, you know, whatever. It's fine. It's great. It's money. I'll convince myself to love it. So anyway, I knew I finally got to the point of being able to admit to myself that this isn't my thing anymore, but I don't know what my new thing's going to be. And we have no money and we need to pay the bills and we have a new baby. And got up that night, like just disappeared out of the living room, went into my office, and in 1 hour deleted 8 years of wedding work off of my website. And in its place, I put commercial photographer instead of like, you know, Shea Cochran wedding photographer, Shea Cochran commercial photographer. No images to share, nothing. I mean, this doesn't even make logical sense, but I just, in that moment, I was like, this is it. I'm going to jump headlong in. And I got to commercial photography because I've been like standing in Home Goods. Do y'all have Home Goods in Virginia? Okay.
Oh, yes.
Standing in Home Goods at the checkout counter, and I'm seeing these beautiful photos back behind. Actually, they weren't that beautiful, but they were, you know, whatever, colorful photos of things on the wall back behind the checkout counter. And I'm like, someone photographed that. I feel like I could do that. And I feel like I would actually like to do that.
Yes.
And so that was like, oh, wait, somebody has to take pictures. Like, who does that? Who would I get? And that led me to thinking, like, what if I just tried that? Like, I'm good. I like styling. I like working with my hands. And I knew Emily Lay was the only, like, shop owner that I knew who had it, was trying to sell an e-commerce product. And I was like,
and was making good money. But
this is like the very early stages of Simplified, like year two maybe of Simplified. And I reached out to her and said, like, this is crazy. You have no reason to trust me. I have no portfolio to show you, but would you just let me photograph your product? And that went really well. Okay, so I need to fast forward the story, or I'll be, you know, we'll just spend our whole lives here. God.
Well, there's a lot that happened.
I mean,
there's
we're talking about 17 years of business. So my work has iterated over and over and over and over to the point that it is now. So got into commercial work, jumped headlong into it, got some amazing, fun, awesome clients like Sugarfina and Truffle Bags and Simplified Planners, and did a little bit in there, and then decided, like, I didn't want to do that whole – I didn't want to live the life of, like, we need you to fly out to LA this weekend to shoot our holiday catalog last minute.
Right.
I couldn't live that life with new kids. So,
and you, and this is important, you were always in the branding space, in the commercial space for yourself. Yeah,
for like fun.
You were
in it for a good time. I just wanted to do something I loved.
Yes. That's very important, because I think a lot of people think, okay, if I'm going to be legit and I'm going to pivot and I'm going to make comparable to wedding income, I'm going to have to get hired by a corporation to be their corporate shooter or their commercial shooter. And that's not what you did.
I just wanted to have fun. And I wanted to do something that felt intuitively creative, where I did lay awake at night thinking about ideas for how to do it. And what was great about commercial work is you could kind of do it yourself. You didn't have to wait till you were hired to create stuff for a portfolio. So,
awesome.
When I got into, I did, you know, did that for maybe like a year, maybe 2 years, but I realized, like, I didn't really want to do this either. I want to own my time differently. And I had so many friends who owned e-commerce businesses who were like asking for photography work. And I very quickly became too expensive for them because of the client work I did get. And I was like, I really want to be able to serve more people. My heart is for small business owners. And it was through a client at the time that actually said, you know, I think you could just make images, and I don't have to be the only person that uses those images. I'd be happy just to be able to use your images on my website, but then also let lots of other people use them too. And they could support all my digital marketing strategies. And this is when Instagram and Pinterest were becoming popular. So all that to say, that changed. That became the Etsy Stock Shop, where I sold one-off stock images. And over time, and over as the industry changed, that became Social Square's membership, which is what you're talking about now, which is now the three-year-long iteration of all of those years of work in the form of stock image membership specifically for female entrepreneurs. Our big mission there is just to help more women share their ideas and businesses with the world. So we have every different type of image in there for almost every different type of industry, so that they can do what they love and not being a photographer, but have the images to support it and to show up in a really polished and professional way. So that's where I'm at now.
And you know what I love? And this, I told you this kind of beforehand, but my favorite thing about you and Graham, Graham's your husband, is that you unapologetically have pivoted your life for the sake of your life.
Every 2 years, I feel like.
Yes. Yes. And I know you recognize this because you talk about it with so many people so often, but that's so rare. It is so rare to choose your lifestyle and then build your life off the definition of what you want your life to look like, rather than throwing yourself into everything you are afraid you're going to miss out on, and then looking back and being like, why am I so stressed? And someone posted recently, like, the Italians have it right. Like, they don't take probiotics or supplements because they just eat real food. They don't stress out and run themselves ragged because they take naps every day. Like, they don't go to a therapist on their lunch hour and squeeze in every, like, people don't do this in Italy because they have chosen their lifestyle, and they mold their life around what they desire. And we as Americans, and any other people too, but we just don't live like that. And you guys, I feel like, just are such you exemplify the epitome of that. And you may not feel like that all the time, but from the outside looking in, I love, I mean, you talk about this all the time, that you work 2 days a week.
Yeah.
And that started, when?
Day one. When I mean, that started, for sure, it started 14 years ago when I started having kids. Because that was all the childcare I could afford. I realized I couldn't do both at the same time. Like some women can, you know, do the mom and the entrepreneurial life simultaneously, and they can do it really well and beautifully. That is not me. And I found myself resenting. Yeah.
Not me either.
I don't think it's all of us, but I think, you know, some of us can do that. But the second I found myself in those early days resenting my kids instead of resenting my clients, I was like, oh man, this isn't my heart. Like this isn't what I want. I'm going to need firm boundaries so that I can be a 100% mom when my kids are around, and I can be 150% head down in business when on my work days. So the 16 hours just came out of, that was the amount of childcare I could afford. And that for me to this day, because now my kids are in school full time, I could work 5 days a week if I want to. But that's the line for me. That's like just the sweet spot for me of being able to get into it, do good work, but then come out of it and live a life and spend time with my friends and work out and take care of my house and go buy groceries and also do all pursue other passions that I have. So have date days.
Yes.
I mean, that's just – I've kept it. Yes. So I've just kept it. And I've always – since I decided, you know, 2 days a week is what works for me, to your point – I've just tried to build the, okay, what kind of business can support that? Instead of what is the business need? Let me build my life to support what the business needs. It's like, well, what do I need? What do I need as a woman, as a mom, as a wife, as a human, as a physical being? What does my body need? And then, what kind of business could I build that would allow me to do that and get creative about it? And that it's been so fun, and we've had to iterate it, and Graham's done the same thing in different ways. So we're proof that it's possible. If nothing else, we're proof it's possible.
Yes. And you're also proof, like when I hear you say that, I'm like, I'm trying to envision, you know, when people in our online world, in our community, we have like KJ community of photographers. I think a lot of people can hear that and be like, that's great. But like, I can't make enough money working just 2 days a week. And my thought to that would be, well, there's a lot that goes into how you've evolved, how Shay has evolved to be able to work two, you know, maybe 8 hour days. You have had to say no to what everyone says a small business has to do. And you only do the things that actually, I've heard you say before, you know, 80% of what people do is not actually growing their business.
The 80% of the work is creating 20% of their revenue. That's just the likely reality for most of us. So that means even if you work the same amount of hours, you could take that 80% of your time and do the 20% with it. And think of how much more profitable you'd be.
Right. And you, so I just want to speak to, and I know you've done coaching, so you know this language, but if someone listens to this and the first thing that pings in your brain is, well, that's great for her. That is a red flag. That's a victim red flag. And I get it because in my mind, I've even thought, oh, that's great for her.
That would never
but then
work
I thought
for me.
I could do that. Yeah, it would never. Yes, we love to say it would never work for me because it gives us permission not to try. And as soon as you say that's great for her, you're literally your brain's shutting off the possibility that it could work for you. I think about you and I think about how, you know, I have this hour chunk of time to do this call with you and then I got to take Miles to a follow up appointment. And then so but I realize I got myself together more today than I have the last 6 weeks. Why? Because I had a boundary and I had a limit. So you live your life, your business life, with very strict boundaries and limits. And so often, I don't take advantage of all the times we have childcare. I'm not in the zone because I don't have to be fully. I feel like you have mastered, like, I'm going to work. And when I work, I truly work. And when I work, I'm not going to do work that doesn't really produce results. Which, how would you say to someone, I don't know how to even figure out what work I should do. How do I figure out what's producing the results? Like, what is my 20%?
Yeah. Well, it's a great question. And I want to let's speak first to the mindset. I think the most helpful question, the most helpful, like small shift that I'm still trying to make in my own brain when I go to the, well, this, that would never work for me, whatever it is, you know, business or life or whatever we're talking about. The moment I go to, that just won't work, or that would never work for me. I'm the exception. You know, the helpful question for me is, how could it work? how might it work?
Yeah.
Instead of saying it's not going to work, and you're just like, you're allowing yourself to just opt out from the hard work of figuring it out, really, because, and Graham says it all the time, that hustle is just laziness in disguise, because you're just not doing the hard work of figuring out what the, you know, 80-20 in your business and that kind of thing. But that, to me, if like, if you take just one shift, start with that question. If you're like, I could never just work 2 days a week, reframe that in your mind to like, okay, how could I work 2 days a week? And then allow yourself to creatively brainstorm. That just unlocks so many more possibilities. And I just think it's hard for us to do the hard work of figuring that out. Now, to the more tactical question of like, well, how do you know, what's really creating, you know, the 20% and that kind of thing. I have a, I do have a resource that they can use for that, where I outline like how to actually 80-20 your business. That they can get that at socialsquares.com/CEO. But it's just the 80-20 principle, which is not my idea. I don't know if it originates with Tim Ferriss, but it will walk you through kind of some helpful prompts to know how to figure out what you're doing is really, really has an ROI and what if it doesn't. And that just takes work. That literally takes setting aside hours to do that. But what I'd even like peel back a layer from that, because I don't, I think what we do as entrepreneurs is we decide we're going to do something, or we decide that it has to be a certain way. And then when we try to iterate, we're still just iterating within those parameters. And I think a better question, it just is a little more helpful to take a step back even from that, because maybe to your point about how I'm using photography skills, but not in the way that was prescriptive, that, you know, the way you make money. If you can get yourself to a point that you're willing to let go of what you have and really think differently about it and say, okay, how would I create $30,000 a year or $50,000 a year, whatever it is that you need? How could I do that if I had to only work 2 days a week, if I had to only work 20 hours a week? How could I make that amount of money? That's a much more helpful unlocking question mentally than like, well, I can't. Like, how would I ever make the amount of money I need to make in X number of hours?
Right.
Just like my encouragement is just like, start to think that way. Start to ask yourself those questions.
Yes. And I just had the thought when you're saying that, like, as creatives, which is the majority of people who will be listening to this, we don't enjoy, I don't enjoy looking at my business and even figuring out ROI. Sure.
It's not fun.
Like, I don't want to know that what I've been doing for 10 years isn't actually produced. I kind of, there's a part of me that kind of wants to live in the dark. Like, you know, we do business calls with some of our students, and someone said, they showed up and they said, I'm doing everything you said and it's just not working for me. And I said, okay, we're going to spend some time here. And I started asking her questions like, have you shown any preview images of what the mini sessions are going to look like? Well, no, because it's not springtime. It's like, that's a red flag.
You're
like
making excuses.
You, if you really, and if you really want to get to the nitty gritty, that is where you start to see what Graham says about hustle. Like, you say you're doing the hustle, but you haven't really done the work of figuring out, is your hustle helping? Like, is it really pointing you in the right direction? So that's a, I mean, we're getting ready to launch something soon. And it just is such a good reminder for me of like, Caitlin, some of the things you're spending your time doing, like making this sales page look
playing
gorgeous
with the fonts forever to try to figure it out. Yeah, for sure.
Yep. Graham would say, yeah, but where's your promise? Where's your promise, Caitlin? Put that promise up there. It doesn't need to be pretty. So I, talking about your life and your business, what I wonder sometimes is, you know, being a mom of now four children, that sounds crazy to say.
That like kind of stumbled out a little bit.
Oh gosh, that's, do you, you know, from a business owner perspective, from a mothering entrepreneurial perspective, like in my mind, I think through, I love what you've done. And I love, I don't want to wait until my kids are 10 to realize, man, I missed the mark on the balance, on the intentional living. Do you think that there was ever a turning point? Like, did anything ever happen, or did the kids ever say something, or did something, did you read something that made you and Graham say, like, we're not doing things the normal way? Like, it's not worth it. It's costing us too much. Like, we're opting out of the craziness of what normal life looks like for a family with kids and business owners.
I think the most, when I think of turning point, I think back to that first year that I kind of referenced with Chloe, where, you know, it's my first child and I'm trying to just do both. And I'm trying to bring this child along into the career that I had built without making any adjustments and accommodations that I'm a different person. I have different priorities. My brain functioning is literally different. Like, I'm not getting sleep, et cetera, et cetera. And I think the biggest turning point for me was that first year where I found myself resenting being a mom and like getting angry that my child needed me instead of getting angry that my client needed me, you know, and that was not what was coming out. I knew was not really my heart or where I wanted to land. And so that was a conscious decision back then to say like, nope. I want who I am as a mom and a wife and a friend to loom larger in my life than who I am as a business owner, even though I love work. Now, what keeps me there is any season of business, and there have been many, where work starts to just take up too much space. Like, it's ruining my mood and it's affecting my ability to be present, or I'm still on my phone answering an email in the kitchen while we're cooking dinner and it's really supposed to be family time. And because we've had really hard and fast boundaries about that, so we don't work in the evenings. Like, when we get home at, you know, 4 to 5 is kind of the end of the day for us. When we're all home, no one is working, not on their phone, not on their laptop, not taking calls, not after dinner. We also do not work on the weekends. We do not work on vacation, things like that. So we put these hard and fast rules in place. Yes. And every time work swells and it like really starts to, we feel that pain point. It's just a good reminder. I always talk about it like, you know, we've set these parameters and we've put barbed wire fences up. Like, this is where we are healthy and I am healthy and our family is tended to. And there are repetitive seasons where I brush up against that barbed wire and it gets really painful. And I'm like, oh, this hurts. Okay, I gotta, these are those boundary lines. Like, I gotta dial it back in. So, and we, because we have decided those things in advance, there's a lot of accountability there. I mean, if Graham's working after dinner on his laptop, it would be so out of character. And I'd be like, babe, like, what are you doing?
Yes.
With the exception of like, sometimes there's a launch or some kind of extenuating circumstance. But because we've created a certain normal, that really helps. So every time we get into that, I mean, and I'm in coming out of that type of season now where it's like, I mean, yeah, maybe it's only taking 16 hours, but it's weighing so heavily that it's affecting everything and how I show up in the rest of the world. Okay, something's got to change. Like, this is not the best situation for me. So those are the reminders and the road markers along the way. They're always painful, and we just have honest conversations about it, regroup. Okay, what can we do differently? What needs to change? And then move forward in it.
And I think there's a few things that I love. One, you started, what's crazy is that you started thinking like this and choosing this back when you didn't have money.
Yeah. No dollars.
So, you know, so someone could say like, well, you can be that flexible and choose this because you guys are millionaires. Well,
we were on food stamps when I chose this. I mean, I couldn't even afford, we moved to Florida. I couldn't even afford sunblock to put on my children in the sunshine state. I mean, I remember my friend Ashley Prophet, who you know, literally dropping off a bag of sunblock on my doorstep in a little basket with like tissue paper, like just to love on me because I literally could not even afford sunscreen. I mean, that was.
But how faithful, like that gives me chills, but how faithful I feel like, you know, a highlight or a theme of your story is like God has just rewarded the faithfulness to the priorities of life that you set back in the time. Like I talk myself into sometimes like, well, I've got to work, be on the laptop in the evenings because I have young kids and this is, you know, this is just what you have to do to be,
to get to this, you know, future one point of the best when you won't have to do that.
Yes. That, so you back in the season where like you couldn't afford sunblock, you're still choosing my family matters more than a career or a business. And I'm going to love, that's the most precious gift I could have from the Lord. And I'm going to cherish that. And I feel like it's been honored And you're taking away everyone's excuses, you know, which is so good and so needed, because my excuse that I go to is, and this goes back to a conversation we've had before, I don't deserve what I have. So if I'm going to have what I have, the better success, make good on the money. Yes. And I can't be the girl that's like, oh yeah, I just only work 16 hours a week and look at all this success. Like, that's not fair. It's like, so how do you, that's my own personal struggle, but what I feel like you call me up to realize is like, that is, no one has put that on me except me.
And I will say, because this is important, like there are logistics involved. There are bills to be paid. I understand that. Like I remember I would have to bring a calculator to the grocery store. And as I put an item in my cart, calculate the cost plus tax so that I knew that I would have enough money in my envelope by the time I got to checkout to pay for those bills. So the only reason why that was possible was budgeting and Dave Ramsey. So I have to like also say logistically, it wasn't just like, I'm going to go play with the kids. I hope this works out. You know, that we learned day one of our marriage through Dave Ramsey, how to have a budget and what our enough was and what we really needed. And we knew we had all of our money tracked down to the dollar. So there was a season when we first got married, we were living off of $2,000 a month. Our monthly income was right underneath $2,000, and we zero balance budget, you know, like we budgeted out every dollar. So by the time we got to this point of no money, food stamps, moving, we had 3 to 6 months of emergency fund savings to live off of to pay the bills. And we knew how to budget and appreciate every single dollar that we spent. So that's just the logistics there. That doesn't answer your question, but you know, that's the tactical. It's important. That's important. You need to know what to do with your money when you have it and when you don't have it. It's interesting that, like you're saying, what your excuse is, the excuse I often hear is, but I love what I do. But I just love, why would I do anything else?
That's not my excuse. I'm just kidding. Like,
in a season, that probably was your excuse, right? And in a season, that was probably my, but I just love it. You know, now you have kids and you have other loves. You have a lot of loves. So that's usually what I hear. And my response to that is like, but at what expense? Like, yes, I'm glad you love your work. I don't only work 16 hours because I don't love my work. I love my work. I love what I've been able to do. But I also love other things. I love my husband. I love my kids. I love going outside and working in the garden. I love friendships. I love grabbing coffee. Mm-hmm. I love, you know, like I have a lot of loves. Yes. And I'm also not willing to sacrifice everything else for this one love. And also, I think a lot of times we use work and overwork and hustle as a means of avoiding hard things that are true. Like there are reasons why we overwork and excuse it for ourselves. One of them is that we're running from something, like you have a past of no income or, you know, just not growing up with much and you're trying to outrun that, you know, like you're just trying to make sure that doesn't happen to your kids. Another one is avoidance, like marriage is hard or parenting is hard, which is what I was struggling with. Having a newborn is hard. I'm going to go hide an email because I feel respected and validated. Sometimes health issues, we just don't want to deal with them. So sometimes we hustle and use these excuses. Mm-hmm. I have to do this, or I love it. I just love doing it because we're running from something. So I think we have to check some of the motives of our hearts, of our heart there to know what is actually like driving us into overwork. You know, listen to the excuses that we're making and really ask the tougher questions underneath that.
And I don't know, I've said this before on some podcasts, but I have recognized that it takes me about 2 days of no work, like nothing, to get into a space, a headspace where I'm like, I am fully here and I have no desire to work. And I want to just be with, I'm seeing my children say things and do things and I'm enjoying it. And everyone is just at peace. And it's like, if it takes me 2 days of a vacation to get to that place, then how much more on a daily like routine, you can say, oh, I just love work. But the truth is, it may be for some people that you say you just love work, but you actually aren't giving your mind and your body and your heart space to fall in love with something just as much because you have 2 hours in the evening and then it's right back to the rat race.
Yeah, that like transition, like letdown period is so, that's a real thing. Yes. And that's why I still, that's such a big part of why I still only work 16 hours. Because for me, those 2 days, I mean, whether it's 16 hours or 19 hours, it doesn't matter. It's still 2 days, Tuesday, Thursday is when I work normal business hours.
Yes.
If I work any more than that, it is so hard for me to get my brain out of work on the other days of the week. So I've just found that sweet spot for me that so that on my off days, I can be 100% off, because that's true. Like when I come out of work at 4, I'm still thinking about work by 6 or 7. Like I'm still half listening to Graham, half like wishing that we had sent out a different subject line on that email, you know, like, or like thinking about something I need to do tomorrow or that kind of thing. So that's so true. And that's part of why I've buffered the boundaries in the way that I have, so that on my off days, I can really go have fun and genuinely not think about work.
Yes. And you have the space for you to enjoy. I remember, this is so sad. I back in the day, like when I was in my heyday, newlywed, it breaks my heart now that I think about it. But I remember telling Michael in a moment of tension, he was fussing at me for working so much. I remember telling him, like, I don't even want to go on vacation. I just love
so much. That does feel true. I think when you're in it, that really does feel true though.
Yeah. Like, what else would I even want to do? Other enjoyable things. And how hurtful. I mean, to this day, we still, that's a painful thing that I said that I have not completely remedied. Like it comes up in coaching a lot. Like, she doesn't even like to go on vacation with me. And I'm like, that's not true. I said it when I was young. Yeah. but that is a part of, you know, discovering like, how can I be passionate and creative and love what I do, but not let it ruin me and, but also be successful. Like, and I am saying this from a place of, yes, we both have been successful, but the thing I just love the most about your story is that you have built this the way that it has been built for 17 years. You haven't sacrificed your life at all. Yeah. Like my story is I did the hustle and Michael was put on the back burner before we had kids. Praise the Lord. He broke me of that significantly when we had children, but I had the hustle phase that it, and you know, we have a good friend whose child is at the school we started, and she's like, I bash the people that are like, don't hustle, because you all hustled to get where you are. And I agree with that, because I do think there is a level of like, you do have to work hard, but everything that you're saying is not don't work hard. It's you can work hard within your boundaries.
And I really, and you don't have to kill yourself. I think there's a lot of different ways to be successful. You can hustle your way to be successful. Absolutely. And could I have made more money and built it bigger if I worked more? Yes, absolutely.
Yes.
I'm at my point of enough, because that's what I've decided. This is what I need. This is what feels good. This is fun. This lets me do what I want to do. Could I be a lot more successful? Absolutely. Do I leave a ton of money on the table? All the time. Like, have I grown slower than most? Yes, but I've been happy and I have an intact marriage and a fulfilled, like a wonderful family life. And I have my health and my friendships and my church involvement and all these other rich things of life. So could I be more successful if I'd done that? Yes, I'm only so successful because of how I've done it, but I've preserved all the other wonderful pieces of life. I think for both Graham and myself, so we've seen it in more than one business, two different people and multiple businesses. I think the boundaries were the catalyst for success, not limiters to the success. I really do think because of the 80-20 principle that we've talked about, I really actually think that it was because of those boundaries, not in spite of those boundaries, that I became successful and the same with Graham. So it's a powerful tool is what I'm trying to encourage you with is – we think boundaries and we think limitations the same way with budgeting. I think limitation, but like I'm talking about, I actually think it was the catalyst for exponential growth because it forced me to make decisions differently.
I just did a podcast episode. I don't remember what it was, but basically somewhere I was talking about I think my children were the best thing that ever happened in my business. And a lot of people will be like, what? You always talk about how, like, you know, you don't have that much time. And I'm like, I don't, but they made me get real
focused.
Yeah,
you have to. It's like, that nap time grind. You have got to know what you need to work on.
Yes. And I know that, like, you know, when I'm done, I go upstairs when they're home from school because, you know, I have a precious amount of time with them. And I think that so often without them, you know, I just got into the mindset of like, the more I do, the more I'll grow. And that's actually not true. Our, it's fascinating. I remember sitting down, you know, Jen Olmstead well. I remember sitting down with her, redesigning my website right after I had Evie. So my first time mom, like baby blues were really
hard. You took it out on the website. I remember,
I took it out on the website. I'm like, this will save me. If I have a new website, my identity will be safe. And Jen's like putting the final touches on. I'm like, thank you so much. I'm like sobbing. And I realized looking back at that season, like I really struggled to pivot from the once was, we call her KJ 1.0. Mm-hmm. KJ 1.0 turned into KJ 2.0. And there was this beautiful refining process that God did in my life where I just realized, you know, I was so scared that everything was going to fall apart, right? All these people we hire, we're not going to be able to pay them. We like 10x'd our business. I mean,
that's so good.
Insane. And that's not because I had more time. Mm-hmm. I actually had less time, but I had to start trusting, hiring out some things, you know? I had to start bringing in some analysts and be like, tell me where our emails aren't hitting the mark. Like, and now we have solutions and systems and formulas, and it is beautiful. But so another question. I love this. I have this whole list. I'm like, this is my moment with Shay. I want to ask her everything I can. Yes. Was there ever a season, and is it there currently a season where you're just in a CEO role and not in a creative role? Has that ever happened?
Really, the question is like, has that ever not happened in the last 3 years? I mean, that's a real thing, right? So I think a lot of people who have gotten to the point of success where they're starting to add on a team and they're delegating and that kind of thing have experienced this, where the downside of delegation, you know, is that now you have now people to lead and care for and encourage and challenge and that you're responsible and you're trying to help them hit their KPIs and things like that. And that started for me, I say really in the last like 3 years was when I really felt like I had like a team. Like let's say there was five of us, you know, we're part-time plus I've got contractors and things like that. And once it started and once it got to that size where I had that many people, which isn't a lot of people, but it was a lot of people for me in 16 hours a week, then if you're trying to lead well, which I always tried to run the company as if I was, you know, a Google or some like really wildly successful company. So we had monthly one-on-ones and I read all the business books like Good to Great and Trillion Dollar Coach. And I really loved that whole, the leadership side of having a team. And so I was putting in the time there and we were having the regular meetings and all of this. And so when you only work 16 hours a week and you have five employees, now a lot of your time is going to now be spent in meetings, operations meetings and marketing meetings and one-on-ones and coaching and accountability calls and performance reviews and all of that stuff. And so that is absolutely what's happened to me over the last 3 years. And I've had to really fight for creative time and it's been really hard. So the best, what it's looked like for the most part is that Tuesday is supposed to be, so let me just give you like the ideal, and this doesn't often happen.
Yes.
Tuesday is supposed to be like my desk office-y kind of day where I'm in Asana and I'm meeting with people and I'm doing all that kind of stuff. I'm in meetings. And then Thursday should be my creative day where I'm doing podcasts and I'm doing like, and so this is, that's true of this week, you know, like it's lighter. Because podcasting is still a creative outlet. Getting to have these conversations and connection is still a creative outlet. So I had to really, really, really fight for creative time, for shoot days, because yes, my whole job changed from being a creative to then to being a team leader and being a CEO. Yeah. And I'm just trying to figure out like, whoa, 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 whoa. Like that's not my healthiest self. Like, so how do I get to doing the things that are actually life-giving and really do contribute to the company? That is a real thing. One helpful thing for me was that in the last few years, I'm not great about block scheduling. I'm pretty good at getting things done. Like you're probably also like, I don't have the personality that tends to get easily distracted. Like I kind of know and I can make good decisions. So I don't necessarily have to block schedule or be super rigid with myself about like 8 to 9, I do this, 9 to 10, I do this. But I do have four right. parameters, four filters that all the work that I do has to flow through. So I have assessed that the best use of my time as the CEO of my company is connection. That's connection with my team and connection with other people, relationships, industry relationships, that kind of thing. So connection, learning. I need to be learning. If I'm not learning, I'm dying. You know, I've got to be. Got to be growing my mind. You know, my creative skill, my talent, that kind of thing. So I need to be connecting. I need to be learning. I need to be teaching. So I need to be sharing somehow, and I need to be. Creating. And creating can be creating written content. It can be creating creative content like imagery. But those are the four things. And so everything I do has to fall into those four categories. So I'm not so rigid, you know, that I'm saying, yeah, like you can't shoot today because of that, or you can't take that podcast because of that. I'm like, okay, does it fall into those four things? Is it connection? Is it creation? Yeah. Is it learning? So if it falls into those four things, then that's fine. Great. I'll do it. Mm-hmm.
That's so helpful because, and I know not everyone, I was trying to think through, like, you know, if there was someone who is just strictly doing wedding photography or strictly doing portrait photography, and they're hearing this conversation and they're like, oh, it doesn't apply to me because I don't have a team. I'm not in this CEO role. Well, you kind of are, because any type of business requires a business side and a creative side. And I know for me, even when I was just doing weddings, I remember thinking to myself, like, I feel like two different people. I feel like I am having to bounce back and forth and back and forth. And now in this season, I kind of feel the same way. And I'm trying to get really clear about, you know, I want to be better. I love what you were saying about being truly leading your team well. The truth is, we found out 3 to 5 years ago, I'm not CEO material, actually.
That's a real thing. That's a real thing.
It really is. I appreciate that you think that I can stay on task. And I can, if I'm excited about it. My sister is the epitome of a CEO. Yeah. I mean, she knows what everyone's doing. She's checking in. She's encouraging them. And I really have had, in my mind, it's funny. I used to look at Laura Casey with her team like a decade ago and be like, I want a team of women like her. And now I've really had to realize, and not in a shameful way, that's not my gift. It's really not. And so I've let that go. She has taken over. But I still have this longing to be an encourager, to be like a spiritual, you know, relational leader. I'm not going to be running Asana, but I can lead the team. I can encourage Casey. I can encourage Morgan. You know, I want to build up that part of my role. I think a lot of people look at our business, especially since we had a recent article come out. It's like talking about the scale of our business. I think they look at us and think they've really got their stuff figured out. And I'm like, no, I'm over here thinking, how can I be more encouraging to my team? You know, beautiful. How can I, what are my gifts? Like we're working on the sales page. I created a header last night just for fun. And I love that. And so I do feel like there's a part of me that is continually reevaluating, where do I fit in Caitlin James photography? Like, and I think
it's encouraging worth saying that I would not be able to work 16 hours a week if I did not have a team. So the reality of my business, now that's not true for Graham. Graham's been able to do it and work 4 hours a week or whatever, however often the guy works. You know, he's been able to do it without a team because of the type of industry that he's in, but his business is owner-centric. He is the face of the company. So I never want to be that. I've never wanted an owner-centric company. So the reality is, in order for me to be able to work 16 hours a week, I have to have a team. So hear me on that. I'm not doing this on my own. But that was a choice. And not everybody has to do that. But also, the dream is not to have a team. So for some of us, the only way we can do this is to have a team. I do not at all think that whether or not you have a team is any measure of the success of your business. It really comes down to what's your enough. What do you need and want as a family? Have you defined that or as a person? And then what's it going to take to do that? What kind of business structure can you create that allows you to do that? You don't necessarily need to have a team. I don't think that's the goal. It creates a lot of complications. Right. It really challenges and changes how you're able to show up in the company. that's not the dream. So if you're sitting here thinking I'll be successful when, no, there are many times that I reflect back on, man, it's beautiful to be a solopreneur. It really is beautiful. If you can figure out you're enough, figure out your highest contribution, figure out the 80-20, like what's the work that really pays the bills and brings in money. There's a sweet way to do that. And you can live a very wonderful, full, rich, successful life without a team. And when you have a team, it definitely does change your role and challenge you in new ways, for sure.
Right. And again, I'm not complaining, but I'm so grateful for my team because I don't work that much anymore. But the pressure is different.
It is. It definitely is.
It is financially, you know, it is, it's not just, oh, I hope we can pay our mortgage and have some extra for vacation. It's, I hope
they can pay their mortgage.
And Emily.
And are they
mom.
Happy? And do they love their work? And am I a good boss?
Yes. I'm like, am I? Yeah. There's a lot of pieces that really, but such is life, right? Like, you know, having more children, like, yes, our life is a constant party. But every child has needs and every child. So there's, you know, there's work that comes along with the growth. And I think that, what is beautiful about, and I can't wait. I would love to have a conversation one day with Graham about what he has done so just streamlined. Yeah. I could learn a lot from him because I have a owner-centric brand, right? You know, like I would love to not have one.
And some people need to, there's so much power and profitability in an owner-centric brand. So that is not to put down an owner-centric brand because personality brands are, you know, we know there's just so much that's there. And that is such a great fit for some people. And then it's not a great fit for other like introverts like me that want to hide in the corner.
Yes. Well, and for me, I realize, you know, I enjoy being my brand. Yeah. I do. I think what I want, though, is I want the experience one day to be able to serve people in a way that I could hand it off to someone and like, hey, keep serving and you can run the show. So, you know, who knows what will happen in the future.
And the challenge there is don't assume it has to look a certain way or that it can't be. Like, I love the question, again, not my question, I don't even know whose it is, but like, what if it could be easy and fun? Okay, so what if you could have a personality-led brand? What if you want to be the one contributing? But what if it was easy and fun? What would that business look like? And then work backwards, like, okay, how do I make that profitable? What would I need to do? What would that contribution look like? And that's really what unlocks like the creative ways that you can do that.
Yes. And one thing that I think I know you have done because you've asked me before, you know, through coaching, asking people that you trust and asking people that you know, what would you want to learn from? What do you see that I have a gift in that you'd actually love to hear from me?
Well, every business idea I've ever had came from a client. Like I am not an amazing visionary. I'm not a futurist. I couldn't look down the road and tell you what I think is next. Every good idea in my business has come from asking, what do you need? Mm-hmm. What would be better than what I'm offering you? What are we not doing? Right. And the same is true about, you know, who as a person, like what do you see that I have to offer that would be helpful for you? Because it's all just very normal to me. So there's so much there to having that spirit of humility and like, how could I serve you best? What are you looking for? What do I have to offer? What seems normal to me, but magical and impossible to you?
Exactly. I mean, I think I've told you before, create a raising daughters course and I'd buy it.
I love that. I gotta wait and see if my kids turn out okay though, right? Like, I don't actually know.
They're already, though. You can just tell. They're already amazing. Oh gosh. I only have one girl too. So I need to find someone comparable for like the boy situation is really what I'm freaking out about. But I agree with you. It's shocking to me. Every time I kind of reach out and ask someone like, What do you want me to pull back the curtain on? And, you know, a lot of people right now in the entrepreneurial space, they want us to teach about how to work with your family, business.
That's great.
And because our entire family, my entire family is employed by us. But I realized, I'm like, you know what the trick to that is?
Julia, coaching. Counseling and therapy is the trick. Yeah.
Counseling and therapy. That's how we communicate. So anyway, Okay, I know we've been doing this for a little while, and I've got to take this sweet child to an appointment, another appointment. but if you were to speak to someone, and we addressed this a little bit before, but someone who looks at what you've created and they're like, "Gosh, I would love to do that," but like, there's so much in the world mm-hmm. right now. You know, there's so much that already exists. Like, I don't know how to even find my piece of the pie, you know? What would you say to someone who, my response to something like that is like, you're going to have to take a leap, right? You're going to have to step out and try mm-hmm. something. So besides trying it, taking a leap and looking for the problems and seeing how you can create a solution, is there anything else that you would say to someone who's like, man, I want to take a leap into a pond that's very big and unknown? What would you say to someone who just is really riding the fence?
Yeah. What can I say that's new? I mean, you're right. You do just have to jump in. But I think where my mind goes is, if you're at that point, man, what a beautiful, if you're like right on the cusp of, I want to start a business, or maybe you do it a little bit part-time and you really want to jump all the way into it. What a beautiful opportunity you have to do this differently and to do this in a way that serves you mm-hmm. and serves your family and doesn't become this like lifeless suck that just takes a lot of prisoners and like does a lot of collateral damage. Like, you're at the very beginning. And if you're not at the beginning, then like use this, like have a beginner's mindset. What if you just started from scratch? But what I would say is, I want you to just really ask yourself, like, why do you want to go into business? What is it that you want?
Right.
Is it that you want financial freedom, time freedom? Is it that you want a creative outlet? You want to own your future? Like, what is it? Get very clear about that. Yeah. Get very clear about the specifics. Like, what does time freedom mean? Well, I want to be able to be to volunteer to go on my kids' class field trips. Like, I want to be the one that's doing that. Or I want to have family dinners. Like, really define that. And then figure out what your enough is. Okay, how much do you really mm-hmm. need to make as a family? That means you got to know your budget. Okay, I'm giving you 10 complicated steps here. I'm sorry, this isn't one takeaway.
No, this is
you
got
to do all these things. Like, they're all part of it. You need to find out how much money you need. Don't just assume, six figures. It's got to be six figures. Or then it's got to be seven figures or whatever. Maybe it's only $20,000 that you need that would really be a huge difference maker. And you could take family vacations or send your kids to private school or whatever it is. Figure out your enough. Right. So know that. So now we're dealing with what your why really is and what that dream really looks like in specifics that are unique to you, not anyone else. And then what do you really need? What are the numbers that you really need? And then think about, okay, what I really need is $2,000 extra a month. Okay, what can I do in the amount of time that I have that could make $2,000? And then we get to the point that's what you're talking about, which is like, now you just got to go try it. Like, now you just got to test it and see if it works. If it doesn't work, you didn't fail. It's fine. It's just a part of the process. Yeah. A saturated market means that you're onto something. Don't be afraid of a saturated market. A saturated market just means there's a need there. The fitness industry is a great example. There will always be money to be made in the fitness industry. So don't let that scare you. But I just don't jump into like, I'm going to build this type of business and I just need to get started and it needs to look like this. Like, do all those steps. And then you're going to like enter into this concept or lifestyle of entrepreneurship, knowing where you're at and where you need to go and what you're willing to sacrifice to get there. And then the creative ideas will come. And then it's just, there is risk involved. And that comes to where you're at. We're like, try it. It's not who you are, right? It's not your identity. You're just going to try it and it's going to work or it's not going to work.
And it might fail.
Try something else. It's fine. It's not who you are. Yes. It's just a part of one of the ways that you're experiencing life and showing up in the world.
I love that. And I think a cherry on top of all that, that I love and am so inspired by you guys, is that you, and this is probably a whole other conversation, but I think it comes down to faith and it comes down to defining what your purpose is. I know, because I share the same faith, I know that where all of your definitions of success and life and what do we want for ourselves. Yes, identity, all of that I know is filtered through who you are in Christ. But I think a lot of people are very, and myself included, I forget this all the time. But what I love about you and Graham is that you do not look at the world to define, well, what's normal? Yeah, yeah. Like, I don't experience you to probably ever sit down and be like, well, is this normal? And I fall into that habit a lot. And what normal to who? Normal
who cares? What if it's normal to everybody else, but it doesn't work for you?
Yes. Exactly. Like you saying, what if you need a business that just makes $20,000? There's a lot of people that would never even think of that being an option because it's got to be six figures or it's not a success. Or people that are thinking, you know, what is my enough? Well, what if my enough is just sending my kids to private school? Like, am I allowed? Some people would even say the opposite in the spectrum. Am I even allowed to desire that? It's like, you guys, I feel like, are just very free from not living in the confines of the normalcy of the world. And that, I think, allows you to live in freedom in a way that many people can't.
That's awesome.
And I love that about you guys. So when you write a book, include a chapter on that. That would be, that would be great.
One last thing. We're going to end on this totally divergent thought. But on the line of like the role that your business plays, how big of a deal does it need to be? Who are you? You know, like what is your identity and purpose? I think once you really dial in what your purpose is, like what your identity, what your unique identity is, there's that can look like a lot of different things. So like I can tell you my purpose, my unique calling, Shay, you know, my story, skills, experiences, personality is to be a light. I can be a light in a lot of different ways. I can be a light as a wedding photographer. Yes. I can be a light as a, you know, a stock photographer. I can be a light as a CEO. I could be a light showing up on a podcast. I could be a light at the grocery store. So it's less about, I got to make this business work because this is who I am. And it's more like for us as believers, who has God called me to be? This can look like a hundred different things over the course of my life. Awesome. That's exciting. Yes. That's not, you know, that's exciting. It's an exciting place to be.
And it's a freeing place to be because it means you can try to be a light here. And if it's not fulfilling, it's not succeeding, that's fine. It's not a failure. Yeah. You're still a light. You just, you are going to, you're going to pivot to somewhere else.
I'm going to shine my light somewhere else.
I know. Yeah. We felt that way with our school, starting the school. We're like, I sure hope this works out. This is a lot of money and a lot of time. And, but I feel like the Lord is saying to us, like in so many ways, like I'm asking you to show up for these people and these kids and be a light. And that's all you have to do. And I'll take care of the rest. And if it falls apart, we'll rebuild somehow. But I just love you. I just could talk to you forever.
Thank you. You have just spoken over the years and in this conversation so much life and encouragement and truth into me. I mean, it's we really don't see ourselves accurately, and we just don't have, you know, we're so narrow-minded and we're stuck in our own situations, and it really takes other people saying like, I see something in you that is helpful and beautiful and the world needs that. And that's been such an encouragement to me over the years, and even in this conversation where it takes other people to like help us to see the goodness of God in our stories and and just speak life and hope and encouragement. So thank you for doing that as a friend in general.
Oh, you're well, thank you for living it and letting us see it so that we can benefit from it. So the whole thing about being a light, like it's working, like it's shining over here. Oh, thank you, Shay. I am so grateful for you.
Thank you again for just the chance to do this.